Hello there, Tony. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. You?
Yeah, doing fantastic.
You're in a growing industry, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's scams and these things to do with computers and technical issues are something that many people go, "Oh, I really know nothing about that," and it terrifies a lot of people, worries a lot of people, and there are others who just shrug it off. But what do you say to the person who really doesn't know that much about technology, but needs to know a little bit to sort of run their daily life? What do you say to them about scams and those sorts of things?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's important to note that we live in a digital age now. So I always like to ask the people, like, when was the last time you heard of a bank robbery? It just doesn't happen in the same way that it happened, 50 years ago, because a lot of crime has moved online. The vast majority of crime reported now is fraud related, so it's a huge crime type. And as you say, there are a lot of people who don't always feel comfortable using technology. But what I would say generally is that you don't need to be technically proficient and hyper intelligent to stay safe online. I mean, some of the most brightest people I know, they will fall victim because they don't know what to look out for. And probably the most kind of scam and fraud resilient person I know is actually my grandma, and she's 73 years old, bless her, because like she doesn't know how to use like all the kind of techie devices that we use, but she knows what to look out for, and that's really the most important thing.
Yeah, I mean, really, what you're saying there is the villains have moved online, and we've got to watch out for them because, for some strange reason, the filmmakers always made some charm out of bank robbers, and of course, you can't quite do the same thing with people who operate pretty much in the shadows online. And it all started out, I suppose, really with getting emails that, well, purported to be something or offering you something. It used to be that you'd get these emails from foreign places that asked you to look after some money for them, and there was a percentage in it for you. And of course, it turned out to be completely untrue. The name of the game is to get hold of your details, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is called phishing, and it's essentially the art of baiting humans. So I'm sure you've all seen these kind of emails. They'll usually try and emulate a trusted source. They might say, it's the NHS or someone, or it's HMRC. You owe us tax money. Please click on this link, otherwise you're going to be arrested. But generally, they'll entice you from some kind of great reward, as you mentioned, Tony. So you've won the lottery. You're about to win some money. Click here to claim your winnings. Or alternatively, it might be a fear tactic, as I mentioned earlier. So they might try and intimidate you. They might say, you're about to be inspected by someone unless you take this action. But generally, whenever you receive an email, just stop, take a breath, and just ask yourself, like, are they trying to get me to panic or do something urgently? Because the chances are it's probably phishing. And one of the dead giveaways as well is just to hover over the actual email address which is sending you the email, because usually there'll be some glaring red flags there. You'll see a bunch of numbers. The domain name will seem a little bit twisted, and there'll be some kind of clear flags that it's not, the NHS or someone legitimate.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of thing is all about, say, getting your personal information. One of the things that kind of bugs me, because I mean, there's a lot of data protection in all of this, that if you were to talk to somebody and you need somebody else's information, oh, I can't give you that because of data protection, which is a good thing in itself. But it's when you get these calls as well. It's not just computers, it's phone calls that you can get from people trying to scam you out of money. But then you get the genuine calls from people like the utilities and that who may want to phone you. They will ask you for your details, but you can't ask for theirs. I mean, what's the remedy there?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. So obviously phone scams are incredibly prolific. One thing I would note is that you might get some people trying to emulate your internet provider or utility company. So basically, they'll be able to look at a postcode. They'll be able to identify that that area is covered by BT Internet or Sky or something like that. They will then call up random numbers in that area and say, "Hi, it's Sky. We've noticed your internet's going slow. We can fix it. Just click on this link." So just because you get a communication from someone that claims to be from one of your utility companies, don't always trust it. You can always hang up the phone anytime. Call the utility company at a trusted source and then confirm with them, did they send you that communication?
Yeah, I mean, is a lot of this. I mean, you mentioned there they go at random through a phone book. A lot of this is, I would guess, where you it's a percentages game almost, isn't it? Where if you phone 100 people and you get one or two people who are interested or fall for it, It's a bit like the car crash phone calls that you get.
Yes.
I understand you've been in a recent car crash. You know full well you haven't been, so you have to wonder what on earth drives this sort of thing.
It's purely economics, really. So a lot of the threat actors are in developing countries. They're in places like Nigeria, where the average wage is very low. So for them, like, you're absolutely right that, yes, about 90% of people aren't going to even look twice at these kind of scams. They'll spot it immediately. But if they can get one big win every month, you know, that could be like a year's worth of salary for someone in such a poor region of the world. So you can see the economic motivation for it. It's just really tragic that often they target the most vulnerable in our society.
Well, I'm going to say that they're the ones that are going to, they are going to succumb to some of the sweet talking that goes on. So you've got phones that are a threat. You've got emails which are a threat. You've also got the cyber security thing of your own computer as well, haven't you?
Yes, absolutely. So about 80% of the cases that I deal with every single week are related to social media hacking. Mm-hmm. So that's where you lose access to your Facebook account. And I'm sure many of your audience, you've had a friend or maybe even yourself who've had experienced the Facebook hacking where your friend messages you, offering you a free gift card or something like that. The chances are like that friend's Facebook account was hacked and now the threat actor is on their account sending you communications. But one thing I'd suggest to your audience is just please make sure you have strong passwords. And I'm sure we were all guilty in the past of having our dog's name as our password for our accounts. But it's really important that people have three random words supported by special characters as a password and then have a unique password for all your accounts. Because if you have the same password for everything, all your eggs are in one basket. And just going back to your talk about why people receive so many calls, often what can happen is when we give our information to companies, sometimes they can be involved in data breach. Mm-hmm. So if you're using some kind of service and that company, for whatever reason, the details of their customers are leaked online, that can be quite tragic because suddenly criminals have access to this huge database of people, their contact details and things like that. And you know, if your password is leaked online, they can hypothetically get into everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit like having, I mean, you have to give your details to certain organizations. And you do hear from time to time, this company's been hacked or that organization's been hacked. How safe is all of this online stuff? How safe are your details if you give them to a company that you need to deal with?
Ultimately, you need to check the security of the company and always do a bit of an assessment. You know, do I feel comfortable storing my details of that company? Mm. One thing to note as well, like obviously in the festive period, people are doing a lot of online shopping. So it's really important that you investigate the websites that you're doing transactions on. Slightly technical tip, but if you go on the URL, so it's the big bar at the top whenever you're on a website,
yep.
Make sure you're looking out for HTTPS. If you don't see an S, there's no kind of authentication on that website's credentials. So yeah. It could be a scam site emulating Amazon or something like that. So if you're on a site that claims to be Amazon and it doesn't say HTTPS, that's quite a glaring red flag. But generally with online shopping, we always recommend that people, you know, use a credit card or some kind of payment intermediary service like, you know, PayPal or Revolut. Don't use a debit card for your online payments because, you know, if you do, you know, heaven forbid something does happen, it really does put a cap on the amount of loss that a victim can take.
It's amazing the little things that are there designed to protect us that most of us aren't aware of. I mean, the HTTPS thing, when you say it's a glaring thing to spot, most people wouldn't know that at all. You just think, oh, it's a bunch of letters at the front, you know.
Yeah, I mean, technology has evolved so quickly. And
yeah.
You just think, you know, cybercrime, you know, the forces globally and nationally, we didn't have cybercrime units until about, you know, 10, 15 years ago, because obviously it's such a new thing. So I think there's a lot of work to do in, you know, educating the public. And, you know, essentially it's my role to make cybercrime difficult in Surrey and Sussex. So, you know, I speak to organizations, I speak to businesses, community groups, charities, and obviously members of the public as well, because we want to make cybercrime very difficult in our communities. And, you know, the tragedy is that it's so easy to do with just some kind of, you know, basic cyber hygiene steps. And as I mentioned, you don't need to be technical.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, and I think I mentioned this a little earlier, and there's a glaring gap, isn't there? Because you've got the young who are being taught all sorts of things in school. They're the cyber generations coming up, being taught on computers, about computers, and all the rest of the bits and pieces But there's a whole couple of generations that you move up through that were never taught anything to do with computers. Anything they know is what they've stumbled upon pretty much as a senior citizen. But then you've got some of the elderly who have very little knowledge of anything cyber-wise. How do you get to them?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. So we always take a holistic approach in our communications to our communities. So we have a neighborhood watch alert system called Neighborhood Alerts that a lot of people of an older demographic are signed up to. So I will send them newsletters and bits of information there. I do communications and presentations with the Neighborhood Watch Alliance. So they have regular meetings across Surrey and Sussex, and I attend their sessions and give presentations. But most importantly, and also what I love doing the most, is actually the in-person events. So quite often you might have seen me before, but I set up in like a busy high street, whether it's, you know, Guildford, Horsham, Crawley, places like that across Surrey and Sussex, and I'll just speak to people, because as you say, there are a lot of people who, you know, they love social media, they love ordering stuff online, but there's also that demographic that don't, you know, receive communications online, they don't like emails, they prefer, like, you know, print media. And I think it's really important that I go to, you know, in-person events so I can capture some of those people. But as I said, like, everyone could be the victim of cybercrime. I would say our victim demographics skew slightly older, but everyone could be the victim. I've seen, you know, lots of teenagers lose access to their social media accounts because they click on something funny. You know, there's all kinds of cases there.
Yeah, now I know technology is sort of a major thing in your life, as it is for lots of people who are part of what you describe as the social media generation, although social media is used by older people as well. But, you know, things like TikTok and Reddit and Facebook to a degree, X and all those sorts of bits and pieces. How safe are they, really?
So it depends on what you're doing on the platform. So if you maintain the guidance that you've got to have 3 random words as a password and also enable something called two-factor authentication. So what that is when you're signing into Facebook, it's like a little prompt. So it will send a text message to your phone whereby you verify that you are the person logging into the account. What I prefer is a biometric solution. So it's where you just put your thumbprint on your smartphone when you're logging in. It's a much safer way of kind of verifying your authenticity, and it can get you, you know, much safer access to your accounts, because even if someone has your password but you have two-factor authentication enabled, they're still not getting into your account. And just going back to, you know, your question about the older demographics, one of the things that people ask me all the time is, you know, having a unique password for all my accounts, that sounds really technical, how am I going to remember them all? And it's a great question. For those that are comfortable with using applications, you can get something called a password manager, where you can digitally store all your passwords on your phone, and you can just copy and paste them when you log in. But for some people who are a bit more old school, and myself included as well, just have a physical notebook of all your passwords. So say that, you know, you've got a Facebook account, you've got an email account, a Waitrose account, whatever it may be. Write down that password physically on a notebook and just store it somewhere safe. Like maybe it's some kind of, you know, lock safe or something like that, or something away from prying eyes.
You see, that conflicts with some of the things that we're told early on, is never write down your passwords. And there you are, you've just said, put them in a notebook. There are, as you mentioned, password managers. I've got a browser, for instance, that is secure, allegedly, and it has in there saved passwords, but you have to break the code to get into it.
Yes. Well, going back to your point about... Yeah. So in-browser passwords are generally safe. So someone would need to have control of your actual PC or your device in order to see those passwords. But generally, with regard to the written passwords, it's mainly referring to, like, a lot of people. There was a business that I dealt with recently, and like they came up to me and they said, you know, we're brilliant with our passwords. We keep it all secure. We write them down so we can, like, keep track of it, all this kind of stuff. And I go into this person's office, and she had the password on a sticky note on a computer monitor. And it was like, and it was right by a window near a busy high street. So yeah, as I said, like, whenever you're writing down passwords, make sure you are securing it somewhere safe. Like, the idea is that, like, other people don't see your passwords.
That's quite an amusing thing, yes. If you are somebody working in an office, do not put your passwords on yellow post-it notes and stick them to the screen. Never a good idea is the thing there. Are there any websites that people can visit to get some more information? Because you've got an awful lot to talk about, really. I mean, and this is a subject that we could spend hours talking about, really, but we're kind of limited for time. So is there anywhere that people can go to get more information?
Yeah, absolutely. So the NCSC, the National Cybersecurity Centre, has a bunch of resources there. There's also the Southeast Cyber Resilience Centre. So that's a more localised, police-focused cybersecurity advice portal.
Southeast Resilience Centre?
Yeah, the Southeast Cyber Resilience Centre. Okay. There's loads of stuff there. And obviously, if you're in an organization, like a small business, a charity, whatever it may be, or a community group, and you would like free cybersecurity training, I'm happy to provide that free as a public service. Uh-huh. So just get in touch with Surrey Police and say, you know, asking for Daniel Sykes, and, you know, I'll be in touch. And one thing that we wanted to raise awareness of in the festive period as well, a lot of people have restaurant bookings. So they're, you know, they're booking tables at restaurants for Christmas, whatever it may be. There's been cases recently where threat actors have obtained those credentials, and they've been physically emailing and phoning some of these victims who have dinner reservations. They've been saying, you know, hi, I've noticed you've got a reservation on the 15th or whatever. Just by the way, you need to give us a £5 drink deposit, whereby the criminal will, you know, take the card details. But it gets worse, Tony, because what they will then do, they'll go buy a bunch of iPhones, whatever it may be, with the card informations, and they'll call the victim back the next day, and they'll say, like, hi, it's your bank. You know, we've noticed these payments, would you like to cancel them? And of course the victim's like, yeah, of course, whereby the threat actor will then say, do you have any other cards that we can check? So they will escalate it as much as they can. So always be skeptical about some of these phone calls, and never ever give your card information out over the phone.
No, I was going to say that seems to be the thing. I mean, most banks these days are pretty good with this sort of thing and use second and third forms of identity, don't they, to protect you know, even yourself. And I experienced this once, actually, trying to transfer some money from my account to my wife's account, and had to go through hoops to do it. And my wife was actually standing next to me, and it's one of those things you can't quite get your brain around until you realize the scale of the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I don't worry about these kind of things now, because I've seen the worst of it. I've seen so many people who have been devastated by fraud, people who are physically afraid to go outside because of how violated they feel. So, yeah, absolutely. I think banks are doing, you know, a much better job now than they used to. So, but yeah, I'm always welcome to help anyone else with cybersecurity advice. Just get in touch.
Okay, well, I think there we're surprising how 20 minutes goes. It's literally disappeared. Daniel, it's been good to catch up this morning, and hopefully at some point we'll get you back to talk about some actual scams themselves, some examples and things to watch out for, because this is an ongoing developing thing, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It'll be a pleasure to come back on, Tony.
Okay, lovely. For now, Daniel Sykes, just wish you happy Christmas, and... well, we'll catch up soon.
Absolutely. Happy holidays.
Thank you.